Sabutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tanamani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharani Nivase Sasunyavadi Prasatyade Satarani Om Aganativanandasya Jina Jina Salakaya Saksu Samilitan Jaina Tasmai Sri Gurave Nama Sri Chaitanya Manuvistam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Sayam upakadamayam dadati sa pandantikam. Vansakalpa truvascha kripa sindhu vayevacha. Patitanam pavanebhyo vaisnavebhyo namo nama. Hare Krishna. Thank you for coming on this warm, sunny day. Think about what brings you the most happiness in Krishna consciousness. Close your eyes. Think about what inspires you most about Krishna consciousness. I'm not going to ask you what it is, don't worry. What brings the most life to your Krishna consciousness? Okay. Think of yourself doing that thing. Whatever it is, so that you feel inspired. Because what I'm going to read now, something in a sense very esoteric, but this is what Mahaprabhu was doing. But take a moment and think of yourself doing that very thing that inspires you. You've already been thinking about it. Okay. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taken, he's entered Mathura, he's taken, he met a disciple of Madhavendra Puri, and he was so enthusiastic because of that. And I just thought of an interesting question. What does it feel like? I won't ask you what it is, but what does it feel like? What experience do you have when you're inspired? Anyone like to say what if any idea what it feels like to say that? It's a difficult question to answer, perhaps. What does it feel like? Okay, you wanted to say?
We like to do more, give more.
But what does it feel like? The internal experience. Wow. Where do you experience, what part of your body do you experience that in, just curiously?
More a sense of well-being throughout the body.
Okay. Anyone else brave enough to answer that question? What, yes, there's a brave man over there.
Nothing seems impossible.
Huh?
Nothing seems impossible when you get
inside. Okay, so where does that feeling that nothing feels impossible. How do you feel that? What does it feel like when nothing feels impossible?
I think more in the
nature. Yeah, so that's maybe by nature. When you say nothing is impossible, what do you mean?
I mean, nothing is a very strong word, but
No, just asking what you meant when you said it. I'm not going to correct you or anything. I'm just very curious about this.
You can do things which you considered before not possible is possible.
For you to do?
Yeah.
Okay, that's nice. So when you're thinking like that, how does it feel?
Hope.
You feel hopeful. What does hopeful feel like? Feel positive. What does positive feel like?
Happiness.
You feel happy. What does happiness feel like?
A sense of love, I think.
Okay. Oh, I won't even ask you the rest. We could keep going on this one. But yeah. happy. Yeah. So Mahaprabhu was happy. He was very inspired. He was in Braj. He was in Mathura Mandala. And he had met someone who he had a common experience, who was sharing a common experience of him, and that was because he was experiencing love for Krishna, and this Sanodhya Brahmana of Mathura, he was also experiencing this because of the same quality of feeling that made that, because he had taken initiation from Sri Madhavendra Puri, so they were in the same, what is it called, Sajatiya Vaishnava Sangha. They were in the same association of people of the same mood, and that was so wonderful. And then he respected this Brahmana so much because he was a disciple of Madhavendra Puri, because he was a Vaishnava, a real Vaishnava, accepted by Madhavendra Puri. So that segment ended, and there were some very important points about Vaishnava behavior that Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami made and Mahaprabhu made. And the essence of the points was that ultimately it's the Mahajanas, the Vaishnavas, that demonstrate what Vaishnava proper behavior is. Because proper behavior, how would you say that proper behavior differs from improper behavior? Sorry to make everyone think on such a day when the sun isn't even shining. But what is the difference between proper behavior and improper behavior? Prasad Mohan, did you ever ask yourself that question?
No. Those exact words.
Yeah, but other forms of it, perhaps. Anyone like to answer? Okay, we have two respondents. I know Gopal's thinking on this one. Yeah. Okay. But how would you define it? The difference?
Something that is beneficial?
Yeah, okay. Then how do you define beneficial? I guess at this point, I have something specific in my mind. So it's either you're going to do mind reading or whatever. Well, it said according, because there's different things that we would consider beneficial, just like in the last class we spoke about who is considered a Mahajana, who's considered a person who you can follow. So it depends on what your desire is. If you want to be wealthy, you follow this person. If you want to be beautiful and healthy, you follow that person. And if you want to be get close to Krishna, you follow a different quality of person. So and what we're speaking of now is a definition that is what's beneficial or non-beneficial. Is that what brings us closer to Krishna or brings us further away from Krishna? And that when you're acting in such a way that your activities will bring you closer to Krishna, that is called saranagati or surrender. And what does it take to only act in a way, and this will be a question, and of course I'm thinking of an answer, but what does it take to only act in a way that brings you closer to Krishna? We could say surrender, because that defines surrender. But what would it take? And again, that it does depend on circumstances. I mean, what's beneficial for one person isn't the same as what's beneficial for another, perhaps. Just like a prescription of a doctor, it's not going to be the same for everyone, but it's going to differ according to the disease. So what would it take for one to only do what's for the benefit and the betterment of his Krishna consciousness? Think of what it would take for you, Irin. Anyone want to answer that question? Because, I mean, I find if I answer that question, it's very humbling, because one finds that one doesn't always, at least I find, don't always do that. But what does it take? Anyone is good at mind reading at this point, or thinking, what is it? Thomas, what do you think it takes? To always do what's best for Krishna. What does it take you? What do you think it would take you to always do what's best for your advancement in Krishna consciousness? In other words, what it would take for you to do what's beneficial for you ultimately?
Yeah. It takes the heart cleaning of having my own desires aligned to Krishna's desires.
Yeah.
That distance is what must be purified.
Yes, and that's nice. That's close to exactly what I was thinking. And would say if that was cleaned, what would you call that in English? I don't know what the word. If you only acted what was beneficial for your Krishna consciousness, you would be considered fully sincere. So one could actually, this is what I really want. And then a higher degree than just sincerity is, this is really what I want. I don't want anything else. It's tatra loyam api mulam ekalam. I'm greedy for this. I can't live without it, without Krishna. So Mahaprabhu was in that mood. And he was so absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, because he was Krishna himself in the mood of a devotee, in the mood of Srimati Radharani. But that's what it takes, actually. So the process of attaining Krishna is the process of becoming more and more sincere, as you're saying. And on one level, this, you could say two sides. One is removing the things that we're attached to that aren't beneficial for us. And the other side is becoming more and more attracted to Krishna. Two sides. Removing the obstacles, the other desires, anya abhilasita sunyam. And that means what does that mean? Abhilasita, say desires. No desires other than to serve Krishna. So that's one side. And the other side is to develop that I want Krishna, nothing else. It's because there are people in this world who don't have material desires on the gross physical level. Maybe they have on the subtle level desire to avoid pain, avoid rebirth, something like that. So they have desires on that level, but what does it look like? Because remember, Mahaprabhu was demonstrating what the journey to Vrindavan is like. What does it look like when someone only wants Krishna, and there he is in Vrindavan? He's demonstrating that. That means he has such a taste already. Because you can't really, really desire something unless you have a strong taste for it. You can't, I like this, and then I also like that, and I like this, and I like that. But if you have a strong taste for this, that's all you want. And that's tatralayam api mulam. This is the root cause of actually getting Krishna. Because usually we forget what the actual goal of Krishna consciousness is. It's prema pamato mahan. It's to love Krishna. So the first thing that we're going to see is, and we've already gotten hints of this as Mahaprabhu is traveling, and he's meeting people and he's telling them to chant Hare Krishna. We got a hint of it, not a hint, but we saw in through the words of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, what happened when Mahaprabhu went into the temple at the birthplace of Krishna, the Janmasthan in Mathura, and his ecstasy attracted the right association, the Sanodiya Brahman of Mathura, and it also his ecstasy and his saying Hari Bol got everyone to chant and dance in ecstasy. So then Mahaprabhu was about to begin his pilgrimage, his parikrama of Vrindavan. Actually, he's there now. And he's in the Sanodiya Brahmana's house. He's just taken his lunch. And then it describes how the then is all the people residing in Mathura came to see the Lord. So he's in the house, he's just taking lunch, and people start gathering outside. They've heard he's there, and they've seen his internal absorption and love for Krishna. He's in the land of Krishna. And they want to see him, because why do they want to see him? Why do they want to meet him? Well, let me put it this way. If you saw this beautiful person who was effulgent, and he was dancing and chanting, and he was fully absorbed in love of Krishna, you don't know what's going on in his consciousness, but he's effulgent. Something wonderful is going on, and he's chanting, and he's dancing in ecstasy. Would you want to see him? Why? Selfie? Why would you want to see him? Yeah.
It's naturally attractive. You're drawn to something that's beautiful and wonderful and indescribable. It's a natural thing.
Yes. What's the, yes, 100% right, it's natural. Because because we're so much not like that. We want that, and we want that. And by that association with a person who has that, well, we naturally think, like the touch of a magnet, you'll become magnetized. By the touch of the fire, one becomes warm. By the touch of a drunkard, one becomes a drunkard. So one wants that. So Mahaprabhu was on fire, and everyone wants, it's cold in the material world. It's cold and it's quite lonely. So all the people want his association. And they came, according to Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami, Laksha Sankhya Loka Aishe Nahika Ganana. They came by the hundreds. They came by the thousands. And no one could count them. There were so many people. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came out of the home to give his darshan, to give his audience to the people. When people assembled, they all came together and Mahaprabhu came out. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu raised his arms and said very loudly, Hari Bol, that everyone should chant. And the people responded to the Lord and they became ecstatic because in his presence they chanted as he had requested, and they became ecstatic. And they began to, as if mad, not angry mad, like I'm mad at you, but they became like crazy people. What did it look like? And why were they considered crazy? Because what they did is they began to dance and vibrate the transcendental sound of Hari, 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 Hari. Why mad? Because they didn't care. And they forgot their usual sense of who they are, which we can understand, at least philosophically, is not who we are. Because who are we? We think of our, we think this is me, and we think what I'm thinking is me, and we think so many things that aren't actually us. We think our thoughts are ourselves, our body is ourself, and that's not really us. So they began to chant and dance as if they were mad, but actually they were not mad. They were previously mad, in the sense that they were not understanding who they were. But in the presence of Mahaprabhu, who they really were, blossomed. or erupted, one could even say. And they began to chant and dance ecstatically, as if they were mad, but actually they were sane. And this segment of the chapter is now over. Mahaprabhu was in Vrindavan. And he didn't come to with a mission to preach. He came to visit Vrindavan, and now he wants to visit the holy places in Vrindavan. So that internal ecstasy again that he was experiencing, he was so alive in his Krishna consciousness, that didn't get in the way of his preaching at all. But rather, the people all came to him, rather than him having to figure out his advertising strategy, etc., how to get people to come. Naturally, people came to him. And if we somehow develop love for Krishna, naturally, people will come. Krishna will send them. It's interesting, I think I've told this little story before, that when I was in China, and I, one of the first times I went, I was in this little city called Wuxi, which happens to be the animation capital of China. And there was just a few devotees there, and most of them were old ladies, and each had their story, but no one, of course, they were all dressed in their Chinese garb, because you can't do otherwise in China, it's illegal. But one lady told the story of how her husband, who wasn't a devotee, moved to a different part of the city. And in that other part of the city, there were no devotees. So she thought, Krishna wouldn't send me to a place where there were no devotees. So she began to pray to Krishna to reveal to her who were the devotees nearby. And then she pointed to this lady over here and the lady on either side of her and said, and Krishna sent me them, and we have kirtan together every night. So the devotees are there, and Krishna can send them if he wants. Because everyone is really... Well, we could ask, well, both father and son know what the world is like. Of course, they're counselors, so I guess you all know what the world is like, too. Do people need shelter? Well, we should ask the father. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of suffering out there, and people don't know where to look, and they look in the wrong place. And as Prahlad Maharaj says, the cures that they find are worse than the disease themselves. Very often, so few people even know the simplest point about the three modes of material nature, and that if you act in that was supposed to cultivate goodness, that's such a radical thing in this world. There's actually a segment of society that wants to do that, doesn't want to get involved in the consumer society, but they don't have proper direction. So there are so many people out there, and maybe we're also who want something more than material life can give us. We already know, at least to some degree, we've seen through it, that adding more illusion on more illusion won't bring us the satisfaction, the happiness that we desire. So Krishna will send those people if we sincerely want to help them and we have an internal absorption. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, just after this, very abruptly, Kaviraj Goswami starts describing Mahaprabhu's journey into Braj. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu bathed in the 24 ghats along the bank of the Yamuna, and the Brahmana showed him all the places of pilgrimage. So there's 24 ghats. The one that's most famous is, which one? Does anyone know in Mathura, in that area?
Vishwamgat.
Yes? You've been to Vishwamgat? Agrawala. Yes? From Agra?
Yes.
But Govanand you've been to. How many times?
Many,
many, many times. Vishwamgat is the place where after Krishna killed Kamsa, he went there to rest Vishwam. And he also performed the funeral, the burning of Kamsa's body there. One after another in Mathura, these holy ghats where different things happen. Dhruva Ghat, I don't know what that one is, that's one. Rishi Tirtha, Gokarna is very famous. Vaikuntha Ghat, and they each have different benedictions attached to them if you bathe in these holy places, all on the bank of the Yamuna. And one of them is Kujakupa. Yeah. Yagya, the Viprasthan, where the Brahmanas, if the Brahmanas who perform the sacrifice, their sacrifices, which is famous. There's a little town in between Mathura and Vrindavan called Bhatriya. You know that place? No.
Bhatriya.
You know that place?
I heard of it.
Yeah, where Krishna and Balaram were herding the cows, and they met, and they were hungry. Well, they thought Krishna was hungry, so they said, "Oh, Krishna was so hungry." And then the wives of the Brahmanas came, the Brahmins ignored them. So there's pastimes and different activities attached to Krishna in all these places. And Krishna has walked in all these places, all over Braj when he was herding the cows, and different pastimes in all these different places. And there's Akura Tirtha. What happened in Akura Tirtha, does anyone know? Is very close to this Bhatri town, not a town. Akura Ghat. Do you know? Have you been there? Akura Ghat? You've been there? What was it like? Huh? You got to go to the Ghat anyway. But it's not just like another Ghat, actually. It's at Kura Tirtha anyway, where this is where many things happened in Krishna's pastimes. Akura, when he was bringing Krishna and Balaram to Mathura, when they were leaving, he stopped there and had a vision of the spiritual world. And at that same place, Mahaprabhu, that was the place Mahaprabhu left Vrindavan, crossing the Yamuna there. And at that same place, Krishna took the residents of Vrindavan and put them in the water, and they experienced the spiritual world, the cowherd men. So all these places have so much attachment, so many wonderful things happen there. But unless you have touched these places in a sense, I don't mean have just visited them, but unless you've touched them and they've opened up their magic, so to speak, it's like reading a tourist book or something like that, and it doesn't really spark. But Mahaprabhu didn't experience it like that. He was in ecstasy. When Mahaprabhu, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited all the holy places on the banks of the Yamuna, including Swayambhu, Vishramgad, Dirga Vishnu, Bhuteshwar, Mahavidya, and Gokarna. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to see the various forests of Vrindavan, he took the Brahmana with him. So now we're going to hear about what a parikrama was like for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whose heart was completely open to Vrindavan, because his heart was full of love for Krishna, who is actually himself, but he's in the mood of Srimati Radharani. And his heart was just, where is Krishna? Where where's Krishna, where's Krishna? And he's in Vrindavan, it's like Mayapur, and it's a different realm. The land is alive, and it reciprocates. So we experience, to some degree at least, what a Vrindavan according to our own consciousness. Now we experience to some degree, but it's a different universe. Prabhupada even said that even if a non-devotee goes to Vrindavan, he will experience separation from Krishna. There's something in the atmosphere. So he passed, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited the different forests, including Madhuvan, Talavan, Kamudavan, and Bahulavan. Wherever he went, he took his bath with great ecstatic love. So we hear, with great ecstatic love, he took his bath. And that just sounds like, with great ecstatic love, four words. But what it's talking about is an internal mood that we can't see someone's internal mood. We can only see the external manifestations of an internal mood. Does that make sense, Bhagavan? Just like now, each and every one of us have something going on inside. And sometimes you can tell what a person is going on inside. You know, if there's a direct expression of it, someone may be unhappy and sad, and you can see it in their face, or someone may be sleepy and they're going like this, and someone may be listening very attentively. So you can tell, you can get some hint of what's going on inside, but you can't directly experience it. But again, we heard how Mahaprabhu's internal mood was so attractive that people, wherever he went, hundreds of people, thousands of people, wanted to be with him and touch him in the sense of touch his energy, in the sense of touch his consciousness, because they wanted something from that. They wanted that. So what was that mood? We're going to get an idea by his external expression, how he manifests everything. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited the different forests, including Madhuvan, Talavan, Kamudavan, and Bahulavan. How many of you have been to Madhuvan? How many of you have been to Talavan? Yes. What do you remember about Talavan?
Not much.
Yeah.
I was there.
Yeah. Do you know what happened to Talavan? In Krishna's pastimes. Dinukasura was killed. Does anyone know the pastime? Do you know anything about it? My poor Wallace.
Talavan, is it?
Huh?
Talavan,
yeah. What happened?
They used to actually make alcohol for
for what?
Fruits and all that.
They used to place some alcohol there. What do you do with the alcohol?
The Kamsa used to drink it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then,
I didn't know that. Wow. No, it's good. No, really. This is what's called Stella Praman.
It's a whole story, a big story. And Indra came and they defeated Indra, and then he gone back, and the Dhenukasura was there. And then Dhenukasura, there was a sweet smell was coming out from the thar fruits, and all the gopis and all the gopas were there to actually get the fruit. And then
okay, now we're getting into something that's different from what the Bhagavatam says a little bit. But the sweet smell is there. It's to the in the summer season, the breeze comes from the east to the west, from the Mathura side to Govardhan side. So the tal fruit is in between Mathura, the talavan, where they have. Who's ever tasted a tal fruit? Yeah. Do they have those in Mayapur sometimes? Yes? You like them? But they're cooling. That's the thing about tal fruits. And you eat them this funny way, that little groove in them. Have you ever? No. Punjabi. This is in Bengal side, and they have, and this forest used to be full of, now there's one tal tree, I think, in a particular, in a temple. So the breeze was coming in the summer season, because by Krishna's arrangement, the tal fruit, which is very, very cooling to the system, it blooms in these tall, like palm trees, palm-like trees. Blossoms in the, and it's cooling, so it gives its fruit in the summer season, the very hot summer season. So the breeze was blowing towards Govardhan, and Krishna and the cowherd boys were on the side of the eastern side of the hill, the side towards Mathura. They were herding the cows, and the breeze came by. The boys started saying, "Can you smell this, Krishna Balaram? Can you smell that breeze, the tal fruits? Oh, the fresh, and that sweet smell is so captivating. Let's get some, but we can't, because this forest is inhabited by these asuras who were put there by Kamsa, these demons. And they're in the form, we can't go there because they're in the form of donkeys. And they are very powerful." And at this time, when Krishna Balaram, when Krishna Balaram heard, "Oh, they're very powerful, they're in the form of donkeys," they started laughing. And when Krishna Balaram started laughing, "Oh, very powerful donkeys," then everyone started laughing, and they couldn't stop laughing. And they decided, "Yes, let's go get the fruit," because they wanted to enjoy the fruit, and they wanted to do something with Krishna and Balaram. Just we can't imagine, but what would it be like to be in the association of Krishna and Balaram, just playing and herding the cows and doing something. And Krishna and Balaram are going to demonstrate their great strength and their power and their beauty, and they want to be with them. They were the heroes, the beloved of all the cowherd boys, and the cows were all there. So they were all laughing and going forward, and Krishna wanted Balaram to go forward first, because he hadn't killed any demons yet, and Krishna had all the fun of killing all the demons up to this point. So Balaram was going ahead, and all the boys, they were just boys in their boisterous mood, and they were going ahead. So when they got to the forest, this big forest that was full of tal trees, Krishna didn't do anything. The boys didn't do anything. Balaram grabbed one of the trees and he started shaking it. And what do you think happened when he began shaking the trees? The fruit started falling. And when the fruits fell, it started making sounds of big, heavy fruits falling. And Dhanukasura, the whole forest was inhabited by these very powerful donkeys. And Dhanukasura came out very angry, and he was powerful according to limited standards. He came out and he saw who has dared to enter my forest. And he's considered the personification of envy, because donkeys, no matter how powerful they are, they don't eat tal fruits. But this is what envy means. You can't eat it, but you won't let anyone else eat it. You've come to my forest and you're shaking the trees, I'll show you. So the way that donkeys, asses, the way they attack their enemy, how do they do that? Huh? They turn their back and with their hind legs, which are more powerful than their front legs, they kick them. So he came right in front of Balaram in an angry mood. He turned his back on Balaram, which is in itself is not the proper way to deal with the all-powerful Supreme Personality of Godhead, Balaram. And he kicked him with his feet, his hind legs, with all his power. And Balaram acted, he didn't even feel it. So what did this determined Asura demon do again? He tried again. And this time, Balaram, as he kicked with his hind legs, he grabbed those hind legs and he began to whirl him around by his hind legs. Around and around and around until this Dilukasura died. He was killed and he threw him into one of the palm, the top of a palm tree, they're very high and lean. And that palm tree with the big, big demon Dinukasura in it, it began to shake and it fell down and it knocked other trees down. So then, now you can imagine if you're a donkey, I mean, not that you should imagine being a donkey, but you can imagine that donkeys have friends, and what kind of friends would a donkey have? Donkey friends. So his friends, who were donkeys, and they were also so powerful, but donkeys, they all came forward to attack. So there's this wonderful painting, one of my favorite paintings, of Krishna and Balaram swinging all the donkeys, they're holding them. Krishna also joined the fun. And Balaram is there swinging them around and throwing them into the trees. And that happened in Talavan. And thus the forest remained free from these demons and people could come and take the fruits as they liked because the envious were no longer there. So Krishna, so Mahaprabhu went to Talavan. And all the forest, Madhuvan, where Dhruva Maharaj performed his austerities. And what did Dhruva Maharaj want? Most powerful kingdom. He was a child, so he wanted something that was practically impossible. He wanted a kingdom bigger than his grandfather. And who was his grandfather? Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma was the ruler of the universe, basically. So he wanted something, a kingdom bigger than the universe, like a child. He was a child, he was only a little boy. But he did one thing. On the directions of Narada Muni, he worshipped Krishna to get his childish material desire fulfilled. And Tivrena Bhakti Yogeni Ajaita Purushapara, that worshipping of Krishna, because he did it not in a weak way, but in a focused way. Not just, here's a leaf, here's a flower, and all the rest is mine. He did it with such focus, that means tivra, which means power. He did his worship with so much power and focus, and he didn't have anything else on his mind. And he wanted Krishna to come and fulfill his desire so strongly with nothing else. This is, again, It's tatra loyam, with this great greed to be for Krishna to come, but for a completely materialistic reason. But still, because he did it with that tivra or focus, his heart was completely purified. And then Krishna actually came. And when Krishna came, as Prishnagab, he asked him, Dhruva, you've been performing these austerities with such focus to attain me, and now I'm here. What do you want? And Dhruva, he said that now that I've seen you, now that I've performed the worship of you and seen you, now those desires that I had are completely gone. And it was like I wanted a piece of glass, thinking that it was a valuable jewel. But now the jewel is before me, the glass is revealed as just glass, useless, valueless. Now I don't want anything. Now I'm seeing you. This brings the full satisfaction to the heart. And then the Lord said, no, you wanted something, I'm going to give it to you. And again, it was a childish thing that he wanted, because how could he get something bigger than the universe? But by Krishna's arrangement, he gave him something, a kingdom bigger than the universe, called the pole star or Dhruvaloka, which is in the universe but not in the universe, and the Lord resides there in Swetadeep. And could rule for thousands and thousands of years with no difficulties, no old age, no disease. He didn't want it any longer. But Krishna wanted to give it to him at this point because he had wanted it. So when Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri, he heard the story of Dhruva Maharaj, for example, hundreds of times, and the story of Prahlad. And he would cry and cry when he would hear it, because there's such deep meaning in it. He was touching by hearing the mood of Dhruva, of taking shelter, the focused mood of Dhruva, of taking shelter of Krishna. And his worship, his chanting of the mantras, his performing austerities, his meditation. It was so powerful, even though there was the floor of materialism in there. But it's that determination and focus that will remove all obstacles. And one day, Krishna will say, what do you want? You've been worshiping me for many lifetimes, perhaps. Now, what do you want? And then what will you say? McLaren? What's a McLaren? Win the lottery? Pizza? Bicycle? Whatever it is, it's just glass on that level. But if we want to serve, because being with Krishna means being in a serving mood. There's no other way to be with Krishna except by serving. So if we want to serve Krishna, which he holds back that, because by that service he's conquered. So he said, why don't you ask something else? But if you say, no, I just want to serve you with devotion. Serve your servants. Serve the servants of your servants. And if you insist on that and really only want that, he'll give you that. But he'll test you. He'll test me. He'll test us all. But one day, if we continue, that's all we'll want, because we'll have such a sweet taste from the chanting and the hearing about Krishna and the serving of Krishna, and we'll be experiencing Krishna, that we won't want anything else. Okay, a good time to stop, I believe, and ask if there's any questions. What's your name, Paul?
Kalanidhi Das. Kalanidhi Das.
Kalanidhi Das. Hare Krishna. Welcome. Do you live in Perth?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Where do you live?
In Mosman Park.
Okay. What?
Ex-Melbourne.
Ex-Melbourne. Ex-Melbourne, okay. Are you ex-Melbourne?
I'm not present, but...
Huh?
Present.
Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? And if no one has any questions, I'm going to say, what do you remember? And then I'm going to look around. Yes, a question or what do you remember?
Question.
Yeah.
So you were speaking about what do we need to have the pure desire to be with Krishna, to serve Krishna.
And I gave my answer. Sincerity. Full sincerity.
And a few classes ago, I asked a question around how do I get from a place where it's mostly impersonal, although I may believe that there is a person, but my practice is more impersonal. And you said around hearing about Krishna, and that means his pastime. And so that for me is a continuing reading to we ultimately get to read about Krishna. At the same time, we have the Maha Mantra that's purifying.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess I'm trying to think, what is it that's like? Can you get there with only the Maha Mantra? Because I see some people that have so much faith and determination and practice, and they're serving almost all day, but perhaps they're not reading as much about Krishna's pastime.
Or hearing. Yeah, that's not good, because it's the two together. Especially the chanting and the holy names. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur specifically spoke about this point. And it's obvious, you need content. You need to know how to chant. You need to know who you're chanting to, about what the name means. He said that the Bhagavatam is the Srup Shakti, the internal energy of Krishna. So you need both. So, and very often when people, you know, they're engaged all day long in serving or something like that, but what I understand is that we also need to develop the internal mood of what we're doing, that it's an offering. It's not just the external of the activity, not what I understand. This is called bhavarupa and chastarupa, that there's the activity, but the internal mood that the activity is done in bhakti, that Krishna, may you be satisfied by this. I'm doing this for your pleasure. And, you know, it's just wanting, actually sincerely wanting to please Krishna. So that has to be developed. The internal mood has to be developed, so sometimes we forget to develop the internal mood, we forget the concept of seva, that this is done for Krishna's pleasure. So we want to develop that too, and that comes about by association, and sometimes it takes time too. It may take this life, it may take 100 lives, it depends on us, it depends on our association very much. And it depends on what we want. Ultimately, it depends on what we want. Because Krishna is going to reciprocate yayatamam prapanyante with what we want. So it's a good question to ask oneself, well, what do I want? And then contemplate if that's what we really want. The best part of us wants, or maybe, yeah. It's seva, that this is done for you. I'm doing this for you. That's bhakti. Krishna is in the center. The activity and the result, Krishna's in the center. So did I answer your question? So how to remove the impersonalism, or you could say the superficiality in our service. Yeah, that's something we should meditate on. How could I do that? Because it's not going to satisfy us. You know, we'll do everything right outside, but the inside isn't right. So we're not going to be satisfied. So there comes a point in the beginning, just doing the outside things is a struggle. And then we do that, a lot to learn. But we can't leave it at that. We can leave it at that, but it won't satisfy us. And that's the Christian's mercy, is that we're not satisfied and we're not advancing. So then we know I'm not doing something right. Either that or maybe the whole thing is not right, imaginary or something. So then we have to deal with that. Which is it? Which is more likely, that Prabhupada and Rupa Goswami and Raghunath Das and Mahaprabhu were wrong, or maybe I might be doing something that wasn't quite up to the standard? No, they're all wrong. First place we look at is our hearing and chanting and association. Prove our japa, prove our dealings with the devotees. Prove our hearing about Krishna. Any further questions stem from that?
Well, I guess I think about, for example, my grandmother. She seemed to have quite like a strong conviction and relationship with God.
Yeah.
And then I think, well, even knowing pastimes about Krishna and trying to practice this, so I wonder how did she get that purity to be able to have such a strong connection with God, although no knowledge of God's pastimes.
But she does. She was a Christian, so she had knowledge of a servant of God, and she was born into that culture, into that type of a family for the reason that this is where she belonged, and she cultivated that. So how did you get it? You're asking, or where did she go, or?
Well, I guess what practice was purified her to that, and I guess what you're saying is the following of a Mahajana, a pure devotee.
Someone who was gave up everything for the service of, yeah. But what's the, yeah, in Kali Yuga, the next generation might not have the same simple-hearted faith that the grandmothers had, or what to speak of two generations, so three generations down. Simple-hearted faith, because, and look what's happening to the, anyway, we don't want to discuss it. You know, there's so many people who have lost their trust in that path because of corruption and things like that. So the next generations, you know, they don't have the same simplicity of faith. So there's a fortune in that, and Kali Yuga's progressed further. So eventually, yeah, the holy names are required to really progress. But it's a journey. It's a journey up the mountain. Any further questions on this? Hare Krishna. Anyone else have any questions? Comments? What do you think? If you don't have a question, I have a question. What are you thinking?
I want to go home and find out what a tall tree looks like.
Why wait till you go home?
Just look on Google.
Yeah.
There's tall trees here.
Yeah. How about what a tall fruit tastes like?
Is it like a coconut?
It's something, but it doesn't taste like a coconut. But it's that okay. Like white gooey stuff inside.
It's like a jelly.
It's more jelly. Can you get tall fruits in Perth? Maybe if you're really kind to Braj Mohan when he goes back to Mayapur, I'll send you one. Okay, thank you very much. See Chaitanya Charitamrita Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Sri Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada.